Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everyone. Today's Monday, November 23rd, and I'm so pleased to be able to speak to you today because last week we weren't able to conduct the show, a special meeting on that particular day. So couldn't get out of it, nor did I want to get out of it, but it was what had to be done. So I'm glad that today we're going to begin the day with none other than White Plains Citizenette reporter, publisher, and editor John Bailey. He'll be with us from 10 to 10:30. And then we're going to be joined by national political analyst and pundit Michael Edelman, Esquire. Talk to us predominantly on what's happening with POTUS and the election process. And in the last hour, it'll be just you and I. We'll put a great emphasis on domestic issues, and then we'll move on to the international stage. Well, I see that John Bailey just got on the line. Good morning, Mr. Bailey. How are you?
Good morning from White Plains, New York, USA. Dreary, rainy, typical November day.
Yeah, absolutely. But very exciting from the sort of stuff that we could talk about today. I was very impressed when I arrived at White Plains Citizenette Reporter, WPCNR.com, your website, and I was very, very taken aback and very respectful of the fact that you memorialized your father, who unfortunately passed away in the 1960s. But what a wonderful legacy. He sounded like a terrific guy.
Well, he was. I mean, that's the whole point. I was writing about that. He wasn't the... He just did what he had to do to make his children better people.
Yeah.
And that was really the job of the parent.
That was a legacy that's unfortunately passed away. I don't know if our present generation is doing the same. I wonder if we are able to pass that along. Because a lot of families have lost that capacity, haven't they?
Well, it would appear to be the case now. Because what has happened today in the present workforce, 20s to 40s, I mean, you have persons that do not, it's hard to generalize. It's hard to generalize.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're more self-centered, and now our generation is pretty self-centered too. But I guess the old folks thinks that cynics that the next generation, our children are just, you know, where have we gone wrong? You know, it's sort of a typical feeling, but
I don't think that's necessarily right. Do you?
Yeah, no.
The kids are doing a good job.
Right, they are, and. In other ways,
in the majority,
they are not.
But my
feeling was that I wrote that about my father because it has always been amazing to me how I think of him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it has always been thus, my mother too. And when you do that and you can remember your parents after they have died and they keep coming back and things they say become part of what you say, which is a really weird thing, then you have the comfort knowing that their ghosts are with you always.
Yeah, that's so interesting that you brought that up because, well, it's the same with me, actually. I guess as I've gotten older and older, I guess they seem to be coming back more and more often, even though they passed many, many, many years ago. And it seems that they're walking there in lockstep with me, or I'm walking in lockstep with them, however you want to best put it. But they always seem to be there. And I find that maybe it's a sort of guidance that I wouldn't have if they weren't in my mind. So I think that's really very compelling.
Exactly. Well, I mean, there's we all make decisions alone, you know. We really
yeah, that's
do.
True.
And it is always good to have a feeling of a go-to advice. Some people go to a church and pray and guidance that way. But many times God speaks through surrogates.
Yes.
Your parents and their memories and your memories of them. But more, this is very esoteric.
It's true. Very, very true. Well, that was the past. And now I want to, you know, immediately jump into the present, or rather the future. It's like you've caught up quite a bit. You do a regular show, The White Plains Week, which you broadcast every week with your co-host, Jim Benroff. And and so this particular program of this week, you now have the technology to upload the broadcast of the White Plains Week onto the White Plains Citizenet Reporter website. That's huge, John. Congratulations.
Yes, well, we used to put it up on a separate website, and my former colleague on the show did that for me. However, you know, after he left the program to take a job with the Westchester County Business Journal, which he has really excelled at, he has really improved their coverage exponentially. And after he left, he could not do it anymore. And so it sort of languished, but then I figured out how to do it. Thanks to new YouTube policies. And, you know, so we did it with the Rolandi program last week on People to be Heard. And then we did it again this week. And it does take a while to upload it. But the point is that it is timely, you know. And
yes.
It now works out well without having the tremendous problem of loading on the on lesser sites.
Right.
You know, like if a regular person tunes in for it now, he or she does not suffer stoppages in feed, you know, which sort of stops the program. Because his computer cannot handle the keep up with the speed or whatever. I don't really know, but this was suggested to be on my server.
Bandwidth, and sometimes each company, service provider, they don't always have the speed up to snuff. You know,
absolutely.
We realize that when there are major issues, but. The point is that it's doable and that you've been able to get it done, which is really wonderful. And also, I'm sure that the number of people that listen to and are on your website will increase, because having a video like that is going to keep them on your website a little bit longer than, you know, maybe a 5 or 10 minute read.
Well,
so
the idea
also drives. Yeah.
Yeah, the idea is to put it in reasonable terms and in a commentary style, so that people understand more of what has happened in the news means for their futures. That's the whole purpose of doing the program.
Yeah.
But so thanks
very,
for
very
that,
good.
Mark. And it's up there now.
No problem. I think it's
happy
great.
To go along now.
One other thing, too. You also brought about a before I get into that, the governor has asked people to celebrate Thanksgiving a little bit differently this year, and he's asking people to only get together with the immediate family that they live with, rather than even to visit relatives or them visiting you. In order just to avoid spreading the COVID-19 virus. And how does that sit with you? Because I was comfortable with it, but then some people took, they were aghast by it. But, you know, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you know, I can't, you know, sometimes it's hankering to meet your relatives and friends that you can't, but it seems too dangerous.
Well, we are just having Thanksgiving with my daughter who's going to come up.
Uh-huh.
And,
right.
You know, when we have had her up before during this time of COVID,
mm-hmm.
we are outside and can considerably socially distanced, whereas inside you're
right.
much more close in, the germ spread. But we are hopeful, since at the present time, we believe we're all negative, but I'm negative anyway. But anyway, that we are hopeful. But I can't see. We used to invite friends who did not have a place to go, but we wouldn't do that. Now, what does this really mean? If you want to take the chance that a college student, son or daughter, can come back into the home, and of course you want that to happen, but they really have to test before leaving to come home.
Right.
And this is what the governor is saying. You've got to make sure that you do everything possible to avoid having them infect you. And the only way to do that is pre-testing and somewhat social distancing with a lowered crowd. Now, another thing, there are parties that are held by returning college students to a community.
Oh, yeah.
And they should not do that. We have had obvious indications of what happens when a bunch of college students get together, for example. All you have to do is look at Florida in the spring break, which
Florida
off to the races.
Florida.
Yeah, well, Florida is having trouble because they have a terrible leadership of that state. Terrible leadership.
There is an animosity in Florida. A lot of people refuse to wear a mask, no matter where
amazing.
They go. People get into fights over it. I'm surprised, as if, you know, you've taken away their liberty, their American liberty to either decide to wear one or not to wear one. But I think it's disrespectful not to wear a mask.
Well,
I'm
getting in the
habit. It only protects them.
You know,
yeah.
It's a matter of getting
of
in
what?
The habit, you know, putting on the mask, keeping it in the car, and having it
right
by your keys when you go out of the house or the apartment.
Exactly.
Or the cardboard shack under the Williamsburg Bridge. Remember
Absolutely.
Those? Right.
And
I mean, the homeless problem in New York is being swept under the rug again.
Mm.
You know, nobody wants to think about it. But those poor people, I cannot believe what it would be like to be homeless. I cannot. I have visited where the homeless used to live in White Plains, on the hills behind the the Hartsdale condominiums up there. And it was, you know, I'd see bones of birds that they had eaten.
Mm.
And it struck me how horrible that this country is allowing that. But that's neither here nor there. But now we have a country that's incarcerating children in cages without roofs.
Yeah.
Or at least I don't think they have roofs. But it's cold in Arizona in the winter.
Absolutely. It's freezing. It's winter.
Yeah.
It's winter now in a lot of places already, and it's only going to get worse. You know, it's interesting that COVID-19 has informed us of all the fissures of our society.
Fantastic.
You
concept.
Cannot.
Great
and
idea.
Absolutely. But we haven't been able to reckon with it yet. And I don't even see much talk about how to ameliorate some of these issues. when we need to ameliorate them all.
Yes, like
the homeless issue is really outrageous, because I know in the Bronx on Tremont Avenue, they built housing, you know, single room housing facilities for people who were homeless. Many of them suffered traumas on the military front, wherever they served. So many of them are veterans. Mentally, they can't hold down a job because they were traumatized to such an extent, and they wander in the streets, and they can't get better. So interestingly enough, they have these, you know, single room occupancy type of places, and they have a concierge at the ground floor, and you're not allowed to leave the place until you take your medicine, and the only place you get your medicine is with a concierge. And the concierge also has appointments for you if you need to go see a doctor, and also for job placement. So it's a way of getting people off the streets, and there will be more people all the time that will be there. So it's not like these rentals are going to go away. And I think it's wonderful.
That is an interesting concept. I often had thought that storage places, which are the new, which are a new phenomenon over the last decade or so, could be used to house the homeless.
Absolutely,
just
we even have
little
a prison,
renovation.
For example, in Yonkers, and the prison hasn't been used for years. It's empty.
Oh, please!
And I don't see what the big problem is in putting people in the prison. They can walk in and out. It's not like you're locking them up. But the point is, if they want to lock up, they can. If they got some stuff with them and they want to protect it, whatever, that's fine. But the bottom line is, it's warm.
Yes, the problem
with
shelters, the problem with shelters, as previously envisioned, is the homeless didn't want to go to them, particularly because of the high possibility of getting mugged.
Well, the mugging was there, but also a lot of people who were homeless didn't want to go to any facility because they refused to allow them to keep whatever equipment or whatever of their own items that they had with them. So in a prison, you could lock up your cell and be secure. And
you
could
decorate
possessions you have would be there with you.
Yeah, you could.
And then you could leave the next day or do whatever you need to do.
I mean,
but it's better than having people frozen to death.
No, it is better. Definitely.
I wanted to ask you about something else. There was a special meeting of the White Plains Common Council that was telecast every hour on the hour from 10 in the morning till 6 p.m. on the White Plains government channel, cable vision 75 and Verizon 47. So what was discussed at this very, very special meeting that was so important?
We have a piece of property, 52 North Broadway, a very huge piece. It used to be the home of the Good Council. The Good Council Church and a convent. And it was purchased, put up for sale, purchased by a company that wanted to build apartments on the campus, and it has been fought now for 4 years by the neighbors.
Yes,
claimed that it needed remediating. Now, last fall, the Department of Environmental Conservation decreed that it is okay because it no longer needs remediation. So this is the major roadblock that has been removed. The hearing reinitiated the proceedings, and the city was expecting a huge crowd of protesters, so they put it into the White Plains Performing Arts Center, televised it. The council was up on the dais, but only about four people came to the hearing. The one I saw on Zoom. And so they presented, and the main complaints were by people wanted more of the open space preserved on North Broadway. One person did, and another person said that he felt that the affordable housing that they were planning to put on there was just for the employees of the assisted living facility that was going to be there. And then they presented the new site plan. And the next night, I don't know if more people attended, but what came out of that was that the affordable housing that they are required to build as part of White Plains site plans for residential buildings, has they have to devote like 10% of the units to affordable housing, or they can pay a buyout.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the meeting, the spokesperson for the company that's building this place said that they have not made up their minds whether they're going to do a buyout or actually build the units, which raises the issue is how many buyouts do you are you going to accept in the city of White Plains before you have enough to even build a building of your own for affordable housing?
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrible policy because it gives developers an out.
Yeah.
It gives them an out for an obligation for, you know, to honor the affordable housing commitment, which is designed to help people who need it afford it. Because like apartments are going to $3,000 in White Plains these days. Now, the other question is, the buyout also protects the apartment, the runners of the apartments and the townhouses, from the problem of the demand not being there.
Of the what being there?
The demand not being there.
Oh, I see.
Like they missed the market. I mean, we have, I think, 8 projects in White Plains that we're building.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens if the people don't come up and snap those apartments up because either they're too expensive, they don't have jobs, whatever? I mean, we have a big unemployment problem in Westchester County now.
Do you think that the landlords, the future landlords, are they that daft? Are they not aware of the circumstances that are presently financially confining their potential customers? Because not everyone can afford a $3,000 a month unit. Those are market rates. Some are even higher.
No, look at that. That's $36,000 a year. So if you go by a rule of thumb that 25% of your income can be spent in rent, then you have to
$150,000
easily.
Yeah,
and it's going to be more expensive to live.
Is White Plains on that level? It might be. You know. It is the seat of the county.
Well, White Plains is the go-to place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But you also get an influx. You don't have a large population in White Plains that reside there overnight. I thought the population was only 50,000, and you get over 200,000 people who arrive every day to work.
Well, we used to.
So, it's no longer that?
Well, COVID, a lot of people were working at home. They're not
absolutely
commuting into White Plains. So, therefore, you've got a tremendous decrease in the amount of street lunch traffic, you know, for example, during the day. But, of course, we don't know how much that really is, because the city apparently doesn't keep track of this sort of stuff because the state doesn't tell them what restaurants make, you know, in sales tax. They don't.
Right.
They leave
that out of it. We don't get notice of that either in Yonkers.
No, it's the demographics of the sales taxes are just not issued. This is an issue that our budget consultant, Eileen Earle, mm-hmm. has complained about for many years because it prevents mm-hmm. the city from seeing a map of the money, so to speak.
Right, absolutely.
And this is a real Amazing. Weakness. The comptroller's office is mm-hmm. a joke. It puts out a press release every 6 months criticizing a company for something or a school district for something, mm-hmm. and this is supposedly doing their job. They don't know what they're talking about. They criticized the White Plains School District last week for overtaxing, not realizing that the reason we have to raise our budget every year and not cut it is because the tax cap that the governor has hurts you if you conserve, because that way your base is lower the next year to figure out what you can raise in property taxes. This is a flaw mm-hmm. of the tax cut. It does not encourage cuts. Now, I've written
that. I didn't realize that.
Very, very key factor.
Absolutely. Evidently, yes.
Yes, if you can.
That's quite brilliant of you to decipher that.
All it takes is baseball statistics, and our superintendent has explained this quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I don't see any other superintendents doing that.
Well, not in Yonkers, we don't. He probably doesn't get it, so that's maybe the reason why. Anyway, John, unfortunately, we come basically to the end of the hour. Any last minutes, a half hour, any last minute things that are on your mind that you want to talk about?
Yeah, well, the people in Westchester have to really start paying attention and protect themselves from the COVID. We are now at a 4.2% COVID infection rate. That is really dangerous with the holidays coming up. And, you know, if you want another shutdown in the county, yes, go right ahead and ignore it, because that's what you're going to get. And we are not going to recover anytime soon.
No, absolutely not. But it's just interesting that this is all culminating at a time when the virus, the vaccine against the virus may be coming out probably by, they probably say by mid-December or into January. So,
yes, however, it should not go to a head. It should not go to the rich people first. Mm-hmm. It has to go to, of course, the persons that are caring for the exponential increase across the country in the disease, positives and hospitalizations. But it needs to go into the communities of the poor where it's really spreading. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It needs to go there. As soon as they help the first responders and the necessary jobs, it has to go to the poor. But I lay odds it'll probably be shipped overseas. It'll leave the country. Now, I don't know that. But I mean, all this good news is nice, but the whole problem is in the distribution and the swiftness of it and who gets it, because it's not going to stop unless the vast majority that are getting infected, get it first by a demographic decision and not shooting it to communities where there are really low infection rates, i.e. very posh communities.
Well, we're going to have to see how that works, and we'll see what the president does. In December and January, it's still going to be Trump. And then right after January, what is it, January 20, we'll have a new president.
Yes.
It seems logical at the moment that Biden's going to has won. But we'll see.
Yes, we are getting these very positive articles that there's that in the New York Times, particularly, how this is not going to this is not going to happen. But if, for some stretch of the imagination, the date for the December date when all has to be certified is not met, it goes into the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate.
And we'll see
and
where
then
that goes.
It's up for grabs now, and definitely feel.
Well, John,
that,
we're going to have to go because we got our next.
Okay.
Show. We'll also have time to discuss that. All the best. Appreciate the call. Thank
okay.
you so much.
Thank you.
Be good. Bye. Well, let's welcome Michael Edelman. And good morning, Mr. Edelman. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Hezzy. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, so I think, but it seems that everything is, a little bit uncertain. I don't know how uncertain it should be, but it seems that there's a lot of talk about who the next president will be. Is it logical to keep this harangue going on?
No.
It does seem that Biden has won, doesn't it?
It doesn't seem that way. He has. Biden has won the election. Trump is simply refusing to concede. Today, 100 national security officials, former officials, called upon the Congress to force him to concede. All he is doing is jeopardizing our national security and standing in the way of a cooperative effort on solving the pandemic with the Biden advisory team and the Trump team. So there's no question. There's no doubt. He's attempting to sow doubt in the minds of dumb people. But there is no doubt about what happened in the election.
No, there doesn't seem to be. You know, it seems that it's everything. Biden has won the vote. And Giuliani has been trying to push the concept that that Biden did not win the vote, that there's election fraud. Even though he espouses it, he's never given proof of it. So why is this latching on to people who, I guess, don't want Biden, they want Trump? What are they trying to protect here? They lost.
They're trying to protect their connection to power. Rudy Giuliani is a disgrace and an embarrassment.
Yes.
They did not allege fraud in their papers. They didn't prove fraud in their papers, and they didn't argue fraud in front of the judge. And so the judge, in a scathing decision, threw it out. 34 lawsuits have been thrown out by 34 different judges. So today, Pennsylvania and Michigan will certify the results, and that will be that.
Right. And that's the end of it.
That's right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter about Arizona and Nevada if Pennsylvania and Michigan are certified.
Correct. One thing that came out of this stalemate and this harangue by the Trump administration that there was some sort of skullduggery. Was that there's something about the capacity for challenging the vote, even though the vote was free and unencumbered, and there was no corruption in the number of votes that were tallied. Why is it that the Congress can actually override the potential vote of the public? How could that be? And why is that written in our Constitution?
They can't. The Congress can't.
I thought they had the right to do it if they wanted.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. Who told you that? There is no right.
I heard this on. Okay.
Where did you hear it?
Well, I heard it on NPR yesterday. I was listening to it, and supposedly the Congress can actually, the Congress can vote against it. It could come before the Congress to vote who they want to elect, and either throw
that
out
the delegate vote. That is absolutely incorrect. You heard it wrong. If the only time Congress gets to say anything is if the Electoral College is tied, 269 to 269, then it goes into the House.
Okay.
Other than that,
okay,
the House
but that's not the case.
Nothing to do with it.
Okay, so that's not the case, and we're not anywhere near that at the moment.
Correct.
It's not a tie.
It's not even close to a tie. Biden's got 306 electoral votes. Trump's got 232. The election is over.
Right.
The only thing missing here is that Trump is failing to concede.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he doesn't have to concede for Biden to be elected, but that is the way we've done business in this country for 245 years. So if he doesn't want to concede, he still won't be president on January 20th.
Right.
The Electoral College meets in 2 weeks. They will vote for Joe Biden, and that will be the end of that.
Okay. And that's it. So then he'll eventually take his place by the 20th of January.
He will
be sworn in
at noon. Noon on January 20th, Joe Biden will be the president.
Okay. And then why the reluctance or why this drama by the president? Does it make sense, or he wants to hold on? And what is he trying to do instead of actually creating a system that we've always enjoyed where there's a, I don't know, respect for the transition?
Yes, what he's trying to do is create, is to gin up his base so that his next endeavor, which is probably going to be something along the lines of a media outlet, that he has all of these people that are going to be willing to pay $30 a month to hear him.
Uh-huh. Wow. So the
words,
new
it's
Rush
all about,
Limbaugh.
It's all about, it's about monetizing his followers.
Thought of that. That's unbelievable. Wow. So I guess we just have to go through this drama and that's it. And hopefully people will get nauseous from this brouhaha that's actually just a made up scam.
That's what it is. That's what he's good at. And day after day, as the days go by, more and more Republicans are going to call on Donald Trump to do the right thing. And he will finally probably never concede. He'll just probably leave for Christmas and go down to Mar-a-Lago and not come back.
Mm-hmm. And is the president afraid that a lot of the stuff that he claimed while he was president, like he didn't give you the tax returns and there are other things that he didn't do or went wrong, is it conceivable that the government, not necessarily the president, but the government can come after him? Is it possible that he could be thrown in jail for illegality?
Well, there are currently several investigations underway involving tax fraud, wire fraud, bank fraud, involving Trump, his transition. I'm sorry, not his transition. His inaugural committee involving Trump, the Trump organization. Involving other areas of business that Trump has engaged in, and how he values his assets for the purpose of either paying taxes or borrowing money. These investigations are pending in New York City. They're pending in New York State with Letitia James. They're pending in the Southern District of New York with the United States Attorney. And they're pending in the D.C. Circuit and the Virginia District. So he's going to face the music, and so are his kids.
And is that one of the reasons they're suggesting, it's been suggested that they won't be returning to New York and that they'll stay in Florida? Is that the way
won't make a difference.
It won't protect
them. Won't protect them if they indict him in New York. Florida will arrest him and send him back to New York. The states honor arrest warrants from other states.
Yeah. You know, when I think about all the people that supposedly were so powerful that were in his cabinet or worked for him or around him. What is it that maligned them? One would think that like a Governor Christie was like an exemplary guy that spoke well. He suggested to the president that he just let it go and relent, that he lost. And then you got Giuliani doing this thing. Is this what men do all the time just to be close to power? They corrupt themselves?
It's not all only boys. Men. It's not just
no,
men.
Women do too. Yeah.
Look at Sidney Powell, the attorney who was screaming about the Venezuelan dictator fixing the election.
Yeah.
This is all nonsense. Okay. And some of these people are ill. Some of these people simply want to keep Trump in power for their own agenda. Some of these people, are doing it for all kinds of different reasons. But the people that are responsible, Bernstein, the reporter, released the list of 21 Republicans who have told him privately that Trump is a disgrace. Now, they won't say so publicly, so he decided to say so.
Okay. It's amazing, amazing. What about the fact that it seems that Trump has polarized people that support him, but at the same time, has he not been instrumental in bringing a lot of disparate Democrats together who are not on the same page? Has he kept the Democrats together? Will Biden be able to hold on to that same support that he had before the election? I mean, he can't lose the election. He is the president. He's the president-elect. So that's going to be an outcome for sure. But will his base be so fragmented? You got progressive, young progressive Democrats. You got other Democrats that are maybe not as progressive. Can you hold that group together?
Well, look, there's going to be a certain amount of infighting between the progressive wing of the Democratic Party and the mainstream wing of the Democratic Party, which Joe Biden represents. But that's not uncommon when an administration takes office. And we'll see how that works out. I don't think that they're going to undermine the president. I think they may push more progressive legislation than he's likely to want to sign, but we still have to wait and see.
No, absolutely. I'm not trying to second guess what's going to happen. There are things, though, progressives are seeking an amelioration to the climate change issue. Does it look like Mr. Biden is going to actually push that forward, and will we join the Paris Accords, climate change accords?
Well, it's pretty clear to everybody, including young Republicans, that the climate change that we're facing poses a huge threat to our way of life, not only in the United States, but around the world. We had how many named storms? There were 30 named hurricanes in the Atlantic this year, wildfires in California this year, earthquakes.
Unbelievable.
The sea level is rising. Miami Beach floods, even when there isn't a storm. There's water on the streets of Miami Beach. We could lose trillions of dollars in real estate if nothing is done. So rejoining the Paris Accords makes a lot of sense. And Biden certainly will do that. And, you know, we have to work with other countries in figuring out a way to deal with climate change. It's just a fact.
Absolutely. What about control of the Senate? Does it look like the Democrats will have won the Senate? Because if they can't, then they're neutered, aren't they?
Well, I don't know about that. First of all, there are two runoff races in Georgia on January 5th.
Georgia.
Right?
Right.
If those two races go to the Democrats, the vice president, Kamala Harris, will be the deciding vote in the
right.
in the Senate if there is a tie. However,
right.
even if those two votes don't become part of the Democratic caucus, I suggest to you that there is more than two or three Republicans who would be willing to work with a Democratic minority
mm-hmm.
to achieve certain results. Mitt Romney, for
okay.
example, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski,
yeah.
for example.
Yeah.
Just those three
uh-huh.
votes alone, if they go over to the Democratic side, would allow the Democrats and the president to make laws and pass certain legislation without Republicans being able to block it.
Mm-hmm.
So watch for that, because I think particularly those three legislators are going to be interested in making progress, moving forward,
right.
and not simply blocking the Biden agenda as they did to Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about the divide? Evidently, this presidential race has divided the nation. It probably was divided before. To some extent, the COVID-19 and the president's rhetoric and so on and so forth certainly ratcheted everything up. Is it conceivable that America could somehow come together again? Not that it has to be a kumbaya moment and it's not going to be a love fest, but are we going to be slugging it out against each other? Is it going to be them or us or them? Which way is it going to go? Can we get together?
Well, there are elements on the right in this country that want to see
yeah.
a hot civil war. They want to see shooting in the street. They want to
yeah.
preserve a white Christian ethno-nationalist regime. But they are
mm-hmm.
an extreme minority. Most people in this country want the country to get together. They want us to get along. They want us to make progress. That's why 80 million people voted for Joe Biden. So
mm-hmm.
it's going to be up to the president. It's also going to be up to media like Fox Media and Newsmax and OANN to understand that they're doing far more damage to the democracy than they are doing good when they spew this bullshit that they give their gullible readers and viewers, which has nothing to
mm-hmm.
do with the facts. Fox is recognizing that now. And I think the Murdoch family needs to understand that it is not in the interest of the Murdochs or any other democracy for the United States to fail as a democratic government.
So we have lost a lot of prowess, haven't we, on the international stage?
Yes.
Are we losing out to China at the moment?
Yes.
As they're rising? And
yes.
will the virus... or the vaccine that's being found to fight off the virus, is that going to make it a little bit easier for the Biden campaign to move forward?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be easier once we get back to normal for the Biden
okay.
administration to do something. Joe Biden needs to do a couple of things immediately. One will be a stimulus package that allows people who are out of a job, who have rent or mortgages to pay,
mm-hmm.
who have to feed their families, to get an infusion of money, in the immediate future. And that
mm-hmm.
can't even really wait to January. That should be done right away. That's number one. Number
okay.
two, he should begin an infrastructure program of rebuilding roads, bridges, tunnels, and highways that puts to work those people who are out of jobs because those jobs have been offshored. You know, manufacturing
mm-hmm.
jobs have been offshored, and they're not coming
right.
back. The coal jobs, the manufacturing jobs, they will not be back, but there are other jobs that they can do. And
mm-hmm.
Biden needs to start doing that as well. He also needs to raise the kind of money that we need to make sure that the United States operates on a fundamentally sound fiscal basis. He has a tax plan that will increase taxes for people making over $400,000 a year, and he's
mm-hmm.
going to put that into effect. So there are a number of programs that he's going to have to do, and he's going to do it in the first 100 days of a Biden administration.
Wow. So that's going to be a completely different change, a different demeanor to his administration than it's been with Trump. And what's the role of Kamala Harris? How will she fit into this whole thing? I mean, of course, she's the vice president, but what role will she play? Do we
know? I don't know yet, but I have no idea. But you remember what Obama did with Biden? He put him in charge of of the bailout of General Motors. And Biden was very successful in dealing with the effects of the Great Recession. I'm sure that Joe Biden will assign Kamala Harris specific over which she will make decisions. But in addition to that, the reason he picked her is she will be the last person in the room when he has to make a decision, just as he was the last person in the room when Obama had to make a decision, so that he could give Obama his best judgment on whatever the subject happened to be, and Kamala Harris will do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that America is going to have a better relationship with Europe than we've had before under Trump? There was a lot of tumult. The French weren't happy with us. The Germans weren't. The British, Eastern Europe was not too happy. Is that also going to change? Do we expect that? Because Biden did have a different concept.
Well, you have to understand something. Joe Biden has worked with these foreign leaders for decades. He doesn't view our relationship with Germany and France as transactional. He doesn't take the position that Trump took, which is that they haven't paid enough money to NATO, and therefore they have to pay up. That's not the position Joe Biden's going to take. He's going to work with our allies, just as Obama worked with our allies, and that's very important. We have created a post-World War II 70-year alliance between liberal democracies, not liberal by meaning party liberal, but meaning liberal freedom, right? Freedom of the press and all of that. And Trump tried to throw it all away because Trump wanted to be America first, and which really meant America alone. And now it's not going to be that way.
And what about, the whole concept of marginalizing Iran? Does it look like the Biden administration will go for getting back into some sort of discussion with Iran, or is that still unknown?
I think they're going to try to rejoin that nuclear agreement, but the problem with that is that Iran has already made, 100 or something like that, nuclear devices. Once Trump withdrew from that agreement, there was no reason for Iran to continue to respect the terms of the agreement. So I don't know what's going to happen in that situation. We're just going to have to wait and see.
All right. Well, there's a lot before us. What other issues are pertinent in this transition?
Well, you have the foreign policy issues. He's already appointed a gentleman named Anthony Blinken, who is a longtime advisor of Joe Biden's on foreign policy. He's going to be Secretary of State.
So that's going to – go ahead.
And he will be announcing his other cabinet appointments tomorrow. Slowly but surely, you're going to see the Biden administration take shape.
Right. Well, that's going to be very, very interesting.
Yes. Now, remember, cabinet officials have to be approved by the Senate. And the Senate's going to be Republican. But you watch those three senators that I mentioned earlier in terms of allowing Joe Biden to pick the cabinet he wants. You watch them vote with the Democrats on his cabinet picks.
And what about the discussion, that with Ms. Coney, the new Supreme Court justice, that with six Democrats to three non-Democrats, three Republicans as opposed to no, three Democrats and six Republicans. Does it look likely that the new president will try to pack the Supreme Court? Does it really matter, or does it not?
He's not going to do that. He's not going to pack the court. But there's a possibility that there could be one or more resignations or deaths in four years. Thomas is not a young guy. Breyer might be, but Breyer's already a liberal. No, we just have to wait and see how this court decides the cases that come before it. Brett Kavanaugh and John Roberts have already indicated that they're in no mood to overturn the Obamacare. So I don't suspect that the court's going to be quite as conservative as people fear.
Okay. So there's a lot going on. Is America ready for this new transition, do you think? Well, certainly Biden did win the majority vote, which, you know, there's just a lot more votes for him than we would have expected. So he not only won the Electoral College votes, but he also won the majority of vote as well. Is that pertinent
for
a lot of people?
He won by 6 million votes.
Yeah. That's like a big number for a lot of people, isn't it?
Well, it's the most number of votes that any challenger to an incumbent has ever won by.
Right. So it's going to be very interesting to watch this transition and see what happens.
That should be
very, very exciting because it'll be a change from the past.
Yes, it will. It'll be a big change. But you're not going to have a bunch of grifters who have their own agenda, like a Betsy DeVos or a Wilbur Ross, in the cabinet, or any of his economic advisors. Larry Kudlow will be gone. Mike Pompeo will be gone. Bill Barr will be gone. All of these people that were acting to benefit Trump personally are all going to be gone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about media? Media took a stake in this election. They seem to be proponents of one dogma over the other. Is media going to be able to be, you know, balanced in the future, or are they now committed?
I think Fox News has a lot of self-reflection to do in light of the fact that their entire primetime lineup is opinion, not news. And if you listen to the real news journalists in Fox, like Shep Smith isn't there anymore, like Brett Baer, Chris Wallace, and some others, they're telling you the exact same thing that you hear on CNN, ABC, NBC, and CBS. So Fox News is going to have to do a lot of self-examination about whether they are damaging the fabric of the American democracy by allowing their primetime hosts to lie to the viewers and to give them total misinformation about what's going on.
Why did we get to that point where there was so much disinformation?
It's money.
What went wrong? It's money.
Making money. Mm. It's all about making ratings and money.
You've
got a lot of people in this country that aren't interested in the facts. They want their negative biases to be reinforced when they watch the news. If they hear something that they don't want to believe, they'll switch news stations, which a lot of people did.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't like what they heard on Fox, so they tuned into Newsmax.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way the news is supposed to operate. The news is supposed to be objective, not subjective.
Right. Yeah, well, we've had 4 years of subjectivity. Very, very interesting. Well, as always, it's always a grand Monday to start off the week. I'm sorry last week I couldn't make it.
I can't make it next week. I have an appointment with a hip surgeon.
Okay. Well, just have fun.
Okay.
Just have successful surgery. That's all that matters.
Thanks.
All the best.
Thank you,
Michael Edelman. Yeah. A pleasure. Bye-bye. Be well. Bye.
You too. Right.
Oh, how exciting. Michael Edelman, always a guy in the know, and very, very encouraging, to say the least. Always a wonder. Well, we have a couple of things that are going on locally. So what I want to do is engage in some local news. It's now 11 o'clock, which is perfect timing to bring up that Operation Santa Claus is going to present awards totaling $20,000 to area not-for-profits at an annual ceremony, which is actually beginning today at 11 o'clock. We didn't get notice about this until last night, but the former Senator Nick Spano, he's the honorary chair of Operation Santa Claus, is going to be spreading the holiday cheer among area not-for-profits and several organizations that serve persons or people with developmental disabilities will be awarded grants totaling $20,000. So it's going to be very interesting. Of course, you got Nick Spano, who is the honorary chair. He, the Operation Santa Claus person is Paka Lipovac, president and CEO of Richmond Children's Center, and people from Sail at Ferncliff and coordinator of educational services, Westchester School for Special Children, and so on and so forth. So I guess you probably got notice from the operation on your own before we did. So just in case people were missing out on it, we posted it last night so that people would know what's going on. One second. Wanted to point out a couple of other things locally. This was very interesting and sad. New York State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, she issued a statement on the death of the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge co-creator, Pat Quinn, who, so she writes, 2020 has been hard. I've lost many of my heroes, and Pat was one of my personal heroes. Pat made the best of the worst situation. He taught us how to never give up hope and to fight for a better future. He will be greatly missed and always remembered. My heartfelt condolences to his family, friends, and all who knew him. And then what's really nice, so we were able to post not only the majority leader's statement, but there was a time when she was involved with the Ice Bucket Challenge with Pat, and there's a YouTube you could watch about that, and also with Senate Majority Leader recognizing Pat and his father in the chamber at Albany back in 2015. Also a YouTube video. You might find that interesting to see. Then, of course, we've got a letter to residents in Bronxville, particularly dog owners. So the mayor wrote that the village is requesting help with registering invisible electric dog fences by asking people to email the village administrator, James Palmer, and his email is jpalmer@vobny.com. You'll see that on our website, and we'll then mail you back a form, and this is a registration which is analogous to that of a house alarm with the police department. So this is all intended to figure out where these I guess these boundaries lay, and that's what's important. So be very, very helpful if you could follow through. The article is there as well, written by Mary Marvin. And then there was some interesting thing with regard to the New York State Comptroller DiNapoli. He said that feds must step up or the New York City metro region faces the end of public transit as we know it. So this was issued yesterday. The New York State Comptroller, Thomas DiNapoli, no, it was actually last week, the following statement or response to the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the MTA's release of its November budget and financial plan. Quote, our regional transit system is on the edge of a precipice. Without a significant infusion of federal funds, the region faces service cuts in 2021 that would change public transit as we know it. It's too late for federal help to assist the MTA this year, forcing it to borrow almost $3 billion to get through 2020 and saddling it with even more debt in the coming years. So the comptroller says the severe service cuts the MTA has outlined today, which is last week, would hinder the region's economic and financial recovery and place a terrible burden on our essential workers. The MTA has pushed back its expectation for ridership to return close to pre-pandemic levels until after 2024. But those cuts could further delay riders' return to the system. The MTA estimates that if it does not receive at least $12.7 billion from the federal government over the next 3 years, the weight of closing that gap will fall on the regional economy, burdening riders, toll payers, and the workforce and the taxpayers. Well, the MTA and its riders are at a dangerous crossroads, as the comptroller said, ever since fares, ever higher fare and tolls, layoffs, and more borrowing for operating purposes are all bad choices as the MTA will be forced to consider if sufficient federal funding is not received as soon as possible. And the last sentence from the comptroller, Washington needs to act now to support mass transit, the lifeblood of metropolitan economies. And this, too, lends itself to what we learned from bear with me a second. Want to pull this up. Yes, from the Transit Workers Union President Utano and the International President Samuelson, and together they both pronounce, we choose to fight. And they explain that they choose to fight, and they write, but Transport Workers Union Local 100, backed by TWU International, is not about to surrender. We move millions of people a day, and we are a formidable force, they write. Together, we will fight for our jobs and the ability to provide for our families. We have endured and sacrificed far too much to sit back and let the bureaucrats impose contract concessions, wage freezes, or layoffs. So they write in bold letters, we choose to fight. With regard to the federal funding, they write that the MTA received billions of dollars in COVID-19 relief funds earlier this year, in part because of strong lobbying efforts by labor organizations, including the Transit Workers Union. And that kept the authority afloat. We are working with our labor allies, members of Congress, and the incoming Biden-Harris administration to secure more federal funding. In fact, TWU International President Samuelson's chief of staff in Washington, D.C., is on the Biden-Harris transition team. And with respect to legislative action, we are calling for and or supporting state legislation to provide new streams of transit funding, such as the stock transfer tax, and to provide early retirement incentives. They're campaigning. They say that Local 100 and the International will provide volunteers and financial support to U.S. Senate candidates in Georgia who support the COVID-19 bill, relief bill that was stalled in Congress for many months. Their victory could tip the balance. That bill also includes
hazard pay funds. So joining forces, they suggest we will be inviting the elected leadership from all the other unions representing MTA workers to a meeting to discuss coordinated action and efforts, corollary to what the government has intention to do. Now, as you well know, Governor Cuomo officially designated Yonkers zip codes 10701 and 10705 within the yellow zone, which requires that public and private schools must randomly test 20% of all people on campus weekly for the virus. Businesses can operate. Restaurants can offer indoor and outdoor dining with a four-person maximum per table. And worship services are limited to 50% capacity. And mass gatherings are limited to 25 people, either indoors or outdoors, and the limit was reduced to 10 people in private residences. So that's the story. That's what the yellow zone means. And we move on to some other issues. Bear with me a second. Another local concern, Riverkeeper's statement on the national on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's pro-health of Indian Point sale to Holtec International. This is written by Cliff Weathers. And he writes that Riverkeeper is extremely troubled that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has announced its imminent approval for the sale of the Indian Point Energy Center to Holtec International without addressing its contention and the numerous serious concerns raised by local, state, and other interested groups. This approval puts the public at risk by transferring responsibility for Indian Point's decommissioning to a company that neglects integrity, experience, and financial stability. Since the NRC has once again neglected its responsibility to properly scrutinize Holtec's qualifications, Riverkeeper calls upon New York State to step in to fill the gap and ensure the decommissioning of Indian Point is conducted safely, prudently, and in the best interests of New Yorkers. So that's really very important. And we'll see where that goes. A lot of stuff that's happening on the local scene. And bear with me a moment. Oh, this you might find very interesting. Moderna's Israeli chief medical officer is helping spread his company's good COVID vaccine news. This was written by reporter Gabe Friedman. As the American drug company Moderna announced Monday that it had developed a COVID-19 vaccine that is 94.5% effective, Israeli scientist Tal Zaks was among the company leaders touting the good news to the media. And that's because Zaks, who earned a doctorate at Ben-Gurion University in Be'er Sheva, is the chief medical officer at Moderna and has been involved in overseeing its unprecedentedly rapid push for a corona vaccine. Quote, the overall effectiveness has been remarkable. It's a great day, he told BBC News. In an interview last month with the Jerusalem Post, Zaks said he moved to the United States because it offered him a greater chance to fulfill my dream and translate science into medicine. I hope that Israel will continue to develop its biotech sector wherever I can be best effective is where you'll find me, the 54-year-old scientist had said. Well, the previous month, Zaks told the Post, the Jerusalem Post, that his 80-year-old mother lives in Ranana and in Israel, and that's the virus and that the virus derailed his plans to see her during Passover earlier this year. I want her to get vaccinated and the rest of us to get vaccinated so life can return to normal, he said. I take this responsibility deeply and personally. Moderna's vaccine will likely not be ready for mass distribution until the spring, but reports claim that it can survive in less extreme temperatures than the other by Pfizer, which requires special refrigeration, and the Pfizer vaccine claimed recently to be 90% effective. Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla is from a Jewish family in Thessaloniki in Greece, and its head scientist, and Michael Dolstein is from a Jewish family in Sweden. So very, very interesting that they're all working for different companies here in the United States. Okay. So let's just look and see what else is happening on a front page. I think that that's it from the domestic, the hyperlocal market. So I want to jump with you into the international arena. Okay. There was supposed to be a trial of former French President Sarkozy, but it was postponed over a co-defendant's health. So Sarkozy was set to go on trial today for attempted bribery of a judge in what could turn into a humiliating postscript to a political career tainted by a litany of legal woes. The ex-president, along with his lawyer, Thierry Herzog, and Judge Gilbert Azibert, are accused of corruption. A lawyer for Azibert asked for the trial to be suspended because his client was at high risk of contracting COVID-19 given a long-term heart condition. Judges ordered an independent medical assessment by Thursday before deciding whether to go ahead with the trial or suspend it. Though Sarkozy won't be the first modern French head of state in the dock, in the witness chair, his predecessor and political mentor, Jacques Chirac, was convicted of embezzlement. He is the first to face corruption charges. Going to be very interesting. Sarkozy fought furiously for 6 years to have the case thrown out, denouncing a scandal that will go down in history. I am not a crook, the 65-year-old whose combative style made him one of France's most popular politicians, he told BFM TV this month. Prosecutors say that Sarkozy promised Azibert a plush job in Monaco in exchange for inside information on any inquiry into claims that Sarkozy had accepted money from the, but that inquiry is still underway. The Sarkozy caused a break this month when his main accuser, the French-Lebanese businessman Ziad Takedine, screen is just fumbling through. Okay, we'll just have to leave that because it's not holding in place. All right, so let me just quickly look to see what else we've got going on here. So we had this done. We're fine here. And one second. I think that's it, actually.
Well, so what we'll do is just want to point out to you what we have tomorrow. And let me get that up for you. And there's our calendar. Yes, we're going to be speaking to Professor Jeffrey Swartz from 10 to 10:30. To Rabbi, not to Rabbi, but rather to Nader Sayish, who is the New York State Assembly member. He'll be on from 10:30 to 11:30. And then we're going to speak to two scientists from Zeiss. That's a microscope manufacturer and also a science lens manufacturer. So we're going to save that information and to tomorrow's broadcast about Zeiss. So that should be really, really fascinating. So we have a full day tomorrow from 10 a.m. To 12 noon. So I hope you'll have an opportunity to join us. And I guess that's it. So unfortunately, I overlook the garage to some extent, which is many, many, many stories below me. But it travels by making noise from the garage all the way up the I'm on the 18th floor, so it's really quite high. But as you could hear, it's very loud, and we have a lot of places just backlogged, and there is no steel to support it. But whatever the case is, that's where we are. And so we'll speak to you tomorrow, and I hope you'll join us then. So let me quickly look here again. I think we're fine here. What we should do is just simply wish you a good day and a goodbye. Thank you and goodbye. Okay.